What a week. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, Friday morning. And you'll have to excuse me, two things. One, I've got one heck of a head cold, working through it. So if I sound a little bit not like myself, that's the explanation. The two is this thing with Kavanaugh is so late breaking that I'll bring to you as it's happening here at 9 a.m. Pacific time. We'll tell you kind of what's going on, and as new updates come through, we've got producer Robbie manning the news desk. And so as we go through this story, I will make sure that we update you if there are any changes. Remember that on Friday, last Friday, we ended the program speaking about this, and at that point did not even know the nature of the accusations that were being put out there. It was not until after the show, Friday afternoon, that it became clear that there was this anonymous letter detailing an alleged rape. Purportedly committed by Brett Kavanaugh when he was a teen. This is some 36, 37 years ago, circa 1982. Now, I say circa because the accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, has no idea, is not certain, actually, of the year, of the time, the place where this alleged assault occurred. And yet, in 1 week's time, we have had a near apocalyptic response from the left and from the mainstream media, who are absolutely seizing this opportunity as a means to derail the nomination. So I'll tell you the most important thing here. Everything that the left is saying about how these allegations ought to be treated, the race to conclusion that Kavanaugh is guilty without any proffered evidence, the emotional analysis provided of law, is everything you and I need to know about the type of judge Democrats want to see on the court, on every court. Because I'm telling you, the everything that I'm hearing in terms of legal analysis here in the mainstream media from people who I suspect ought to know better, is so stupid and wrong and not how our legal system works. So let me unpackage this for you. There are two phrases that have been used all week by a number of prominent commentators, pundits and the like. You've heard them. And one of them is due process, due process. And the other one, penny for your thoughts, anyone? Presumption of innocence. Now, these are two concepts that are rooted in law, right? And these are two, the due process clauses in the Fifth and the 14th Amendment, both having to do with if the government seeks to take something away from you, there needs to be due process. There needs to be a reliable system by which you are deprived of your life, your liberty, or your property. Now, here, what was at stake is a federal job. And the job in question is, of course, that of Supreme Court justice. The due process, and I've heard this is so misused, the idea of due process here applies not to the accuser, but rather to the accused. The accuser isn't losing anything. He's not losing any government benefit. The government isn't seeking to take anything away from her. It's the accused, it's Brett Kavanaugh that is entitled to due process, and the same is true for the presumption of innocence, right? Like Chris Cuomo, did you hear this ridiculous tweet that he sent out? Well, the gist of it was, well, who do you think deserves the presumption of innocence more? Is it Brett Kavanaugh or Christine Ford? Or I don't know. And he ran one of those little polls. I thought it was very interesting, actually, that I of course, participated in the poll. And I think as you as I kind of continue explaining my thoughts here, I think you'll understand probably which one I selected. But the interesting thing is the majority of people selected Brett Kavanaugh. And I was found this encouraging because this is not a political issue. This is not a Republican-Democrat issue. This is a matter of law. And the law says it's the accused that deserves the presumption of innocence. And actually, the accuser in our criminal justice system has no special constitutional rights. The process by which you bring you turn an accusation into a criminal charge, you have to go through a prosecutor. You've got to go through a person who is empowered by the relevant sovereign whose law that you violated. So, for example, what we call a sovereign like the state of California or the United States. Okay, two separate sovereigns. So you go to a county prosecutor, a state prosecutor, a federal prosecutor. You have to say, hey, listen, this happened to me. And you've got to get them to believe you. And depending on the charge, it may even require getting a grand jury to believe you. You can't just waltz into court and say, Your Honor, I am here to assert my presumption of innocence. Brett Kavanaugh, 37 years ago, did X, Y, and Z to me. It doesn't work this way. The accused holds the presumption of innocence and has a special set of enumerated rights in the Constitution that protect him or her and ensure that they get a fair trial. And all of the elements that fall into place there are being wholesale ignored by the Democrats in Congress. And that is not a tribalist issue between Republican and Democrat. It is not a political issue between the left and the right. It is simply a constitutional issue where emotion, where feelings, where sensitivities, and most important, social agendas control over law and certainly over right and wrong. So here is what's happening. I don't know if it's on or off. She's supposed to come in and testify. And by the way, one of the conditions right now, as of this morning, that she was putting out there was, I don't want Brett Kavanaugh in the room. Did you hear about this? In a criminal case, you are allowed to, as the accused, to confront any witnesses against you. And there's I don't think our founding fathers gave a rat's rear end about re-victimizing anyone. They understood that innocent people could go to jail. Innocent people could be executed. Innocent people could face punishments that they were wholly undeserving of if we didn't create a transparent court process. The first thing that dictatorships do, the first thing that does in a kangaroo court you do is you don't allow the cross-examination of witnesses and you do not allow the accused to confront his accuser. And that is exactly what Blasey Ford and her attorney, Deborah Katz, want to do. Now, this whole thing, you must understand, this whole thing stinks. As it begins to unravel, first we have an anonymous tip. We have an anonymous letter. Well, the letter isn't anonymous, but we don't know who it is. And it's sent to Senator Feinstein. Now, Feinstein, you've got to understand, she's in a bit of a political pickle here. The context, there's always a political context for why people do things. So there's two motivations. One, the Democratic Party has a high-stakes fight here to keep Kavanaugh off the court. And Kavanaugh's hearings a couple weeks back were anything but eventful. The guy is milquetoast. He's a square. I mean, in all his life, nothing bad came out. There's nothing. He's just a kind of a boring religious guy who's, I don't know what to tell you. Smart, answered all the questions, no big issues, unflappable, sailed through the process. The Democrats are totally flummoxed. Now, I assure you one thing, that from the day that Kavanaugh was first nominated, every dollar the Democrats had sparely loosely hanging out was spent on finding dirt on this guy. that all they have is this flimsy one accusation that has, well, it was so flimsy, honestly, in my opinion, Feinstein kept it buried because she wasn't even sure she could use it. And it wasn't until the 11th hour, a week before they were set to vote, when, you know, 2 weeks away probably from him getting confirmed by the full Senate, that someone in her office, and it may not have even been her, but someone within the Democratic Party establishment decided to leak this story to the Washington Post. And next thing you know, you've got this, and this is what happened on Friday, right as we were finishing up our program here. Now you've got a series of events unfolding and this cry to reopen the hearings. So the whole week, right, Feinstein meets with Kavanaugh privately, something like 3 or 4 weeks earlier, in her office, could have raised the issue, didn't. She then has multiple opportunities to ask questions of Kavanaugh under oath, doesn't get anywhere near any of the allegations made in this letter that was already in her possession, and instead waits at the 11th hour to drop this on all of us, right? Now, to me, obviously, it's a delay ploy. But beyond that, more alarmingly, I'm absolutely blown away at how we treat these type of allegations when there is absolutely zero substantiation, right? We don't have any independent witness. We have a guy who is, and again, this is as of Friday morning, Kavanaugh's absolutely willing. I will come in and testify. I'm going to be there on Monday. The sooner the better. I want to clear my name. And we've got an accuser who goes, whoa, I can't come in. I'm not going to come in. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to participate. Thursday. Maybe I'm going to come in on Thursday, but, you know, here are my conditions. I mean, what's there to tell? It happened 30 plus years ago. You know enough about it to write about it. You've articulated already the story on paper. What kind of prep do you need? The idea is that if you're telling the truth, the truth doesn't require preparation. But the shrill histrionics here shows just how desperate Democrats are to stop Trump, are to stop this nomination from happening, and are absolutely committed to doing whatever necessary. And it ought to shine some light on exactly how the Trump-Russia thing has been conducted. Because I think, I think that the issue of election meddling is a little more opaque, a little more complicated. And a lot of people don't viscerally understand it. Well, Russia's bad. You know, maybe they did interfere. And, you know, Trump wanted to win. And so he had that sneaky meeting. And, you know, maybe there's something there. But every American instinctively understands that high school is a long time ago when you're in your 50s. Every American went to high school. Every American who has a kid in high school right now is literally shaking in their boots. I was, as a parent, you know, what do you think parents are talking about? I'll tell you what we're talking about. We don't even have kids in high school yet. And we're telling them, kids, look at what's going on in the news. You know, something you didn't do in high school can come back to haunt you. Don't go anywhere alone. Don't be anywhere by yourself. Stay away from crazy liberal chicks. They'll be your undoing. But the real thing, you know, but and again, none of this ever came up. How many positions has Kavanaugh held? How many times has he been put on a court or had a government job? Multiple times. I counted 6 individual FBI background checks that he must have been subjected to in his lifetime. And I don't know if you ever have had or have been yourselves in law enforcement. I've had a number of friends who have joined. I just had a friend recently who's applying for a new law enforcement job. They're very detailed. Robbie, I remember when they came asking me about you. I mean, in-person interviews, they want the name. They want you to provide names, right? And then they want me to provide names, and they go and they create this web to link up who's who in your life and to verify that you are who you say you are and that there are no issues in your past. But the one thing about this, which is why I think out of probably a lot of crazy kooky letters that people sent, because you got a guy like Kavanaugh who's gone to a prep school and gone to liberal colleges and has, I assume, over his lifetime, has come into contact with a number of crazy liberal people who'd love to sink him right now. So I doubt this is the only accusation that's floating out there, but they picked this one. And they picked it because it was outside the scope of the FBI investigation, which starts when you turn 18. Every background check, I know this from becoming a lawyer in California, starts, it asks for an accounting of your time from when you're an adult, when you turn 18. And I don't think it's accidental that they went to this high school thing, but it's going to come back and hurt them. I'll explain that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. More on this. Very fascinating stuff. Very revealing. Tells you everything you need to know about how desperate the Democrats are going to be. I'll explain the political implications of this, too. Does this have any bearing on the midterms? I certainly think so. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Nation, why release the letter when they did? They were sitting on it for months. The answer, I think, in part, is polling. Now, Sam, what do you mean? It's quite simple. I think that in the last week and a half, the Democrats became emboldened that they might possibly take the Senate. Now, I have strong reservations about this as I look at numbers. They're basically everything would have to work out for them and nothing work out for the Republicans in order for that to occur. But I do think absolutely that part of the issue here is that they realize that if they delayed this, they would, in essence, have an opportunity to push this nomination past November, and then what would they call it? A Merrick Garlanding of Judge Kavanaugh, referring to, of course, Obama's nominee that for Scalia's seat that Mitch McConnell refused to take to the floor. So at any rate, a lot of theories circulating. But the big refrain you're hearing, folks, is this question of let the FBI investigate. Now, they've turned this over to the FBI twice. In fact, before it was made public, apparently Feinstein's office had sent this on to the FBI asking them to investigate, and the FBI politely declined. And they declined a second time this week. As I mentioned, the reason they're doing this, first of all, the background check starts at 18. One. Two, the other issue is that the FBI doesn't, if this is a criminal act, right? If the allegation made, and it is, if the allegation is true, it's a criminal act. So who investigates that? It's not a federal case, right? It's not a bank robbery. It's not any kind of federal law that was violated. What we have here is a state statute prosecuted by the state or the county where it occurred. In this case, Maryland. So the FBI is not the appropriate agency, and the Democrats are conflating this. And I think a lot of people just are not informed enough. They don't understand. They think, well, the FBI is the one who investigated him. They're not investigating charges. They're looking into his past. Literally, the only thing the FBI would do is say, we found an allegation. This is what we know about the allegation and submit it. This is how background checks work. The FBI isn't going to judge the merits of the allegation. It's like Joe Friday on Dragnet. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. They're going to come in and say, this is what we found, this is what we did, this is what we see, here you go. Who is the trier of fact here? The trier of fact is the Senate. And they would be, you know, privy to whatever is written in the FBI report, which at this point, it sounds like is nothing would be in there other than what we already have reading the Washington Post. So all this is a blatant stall tactic, an effort. And I think probably behind the scenes, too, there's some recruiting going on to find some corroboration for her story. And you're noticing that even loyal allies of Dr. Ford are peeling away. Her friend, you know, the friend that first went on social media and says, I was there, I saw it, this happened, you know, it was terrible, the school that we went to. Well, she had to walk it back. This is Christina King Miranda speaking on Wednesday night, aired on Thursday on NPR, Nina Totenberg's program. Listen closely.
That it happened or not, I have no idea. I can't say that it did or didn't. In my post, I was, you know, empowered, and I was sure it probably did. I had no idea that I would have to now, you know, go to the specifics and defend it before 50 cable channels and have my face spread all over MSNBC News and Twitter.
I don't know if she's a lawyer or not. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. Maybe she's a lawyer, okay? Or maybe she talked to a lawyer. But either way, somebody with half a brain told her, hey, lady, if you're going to be the one person out there front and center that says it happened, you're going to get called in to testify and you're going to have to testify under oath. And you better be damn skipping straight sure that this really happened. And she went, oh, yeah, never mind. This, when a liberal says, I feel empowered, that means they're going to a rally. They're squeezing into a tight little pussy hat. And screaming about how much they hate Trump and want to abort as many fetuses as possible. It does not involve doing 10 years for perjury. All right. I'm going to do more on this here. We're not going to stop. We're plowing right through this. More on the politics of this. And also, I wonder how the American public is taking this. There's a poll, and I think the poll is wrong. And I'll tell you why. And I'll actually even go to CNN as a source, believe it or not. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation, making radio great again here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. And there was a poll that came out that suggested that people are cooling on the idea of Brett Kavanaugh. I expected this in part. This is, I don't put an enormous stock in polls for one. And I also think that this is... I also think that this is a means by which the authors of a poll, or the the instigators of a poll, can manipulate people in Congress, right? Elected officials, look, support for this guy is falling. It gives political cover for Democrats to continue with this type of nonsense. By all means, continue with this crap, and I'll tell you why. An interesting thing happened. I was watching CNN. Let me see if I can figure out who this was. CNN had a panel of women. They had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 women. They appear from, you know, middle-aged women, some of them a little younger. So there's a bit of a range. And they brought them down and they asked them about Kavanaugh. And they were first asked if they believe Kavanaugh. What do they make generally of this? The interviewer's name is, let's see here. I don't have that in front of me, but I'll get that to you in a minute. But at any rate, here what we have, a mixed panel, Democrats, Republicans. Listen to what they say.
A show of hands. How many of you believe Judge Kavanaugh when he says this didn't happen?
I believe him.
I do believe him.
They all believe him.
I believe him.
They all believe him. Everybody's hands are going up.
The word of a woman, something that happened 36 years ago, when this guy has an impeccable reputation. There was nobody that has spoken ill will about him. Everyone that speaks about him, this guy's an altar boy, you know, a scout. He's, you know, because one woman made an allegation. Sorry, I don't buy it.
But in the grand scheme of things, my goodness, there was no intercourse. There was maybe a touch.
Right.
Can we really, 36 years later, she's still stuck on that? Had it happen?
I mean, we're talking about a 15-year-old girl, which I respect. You know, I'm a woman, I respect. And we're talking about a 17-year-old boy in high school with testosterone running high. Tell me what boy hasn't done this in high school. Please, I would like to know.
Yeah, okay, so can you believe that? Actually, you've got a woman saying, hey, It's a horny boy. You know, maybe it happened. I don't know. I don't really care. You know, it's bad, actually, when they're losing. So it's bad when CNN picks, quote unquote, voters at random, which they have vetted through some sort of process to predetermine. This is not the outcome that Randy Kay, that's her name, the news presenter here on CNN doing the interview. This is not what Randy Kay wanted to have said. She wanted to have a panel of women say, this is terrible. No place on the court. They wanted political cover for the narrative that CNN and others have been pushing this whole time. But they didn't get it. And they didn't get it because we as Americans have something within us that is special. Things have to pass a certain fairness test, a sniff test. And this deal with Dr. Ford and this nonsense accusation, it doesn't pass that basic level gut check that we all do with something. The most damaging thing here in that first part of the interview is that even if the allegation were true, it really didn't matter hell beans to this lady. I promise you there are many, many, many people just like her. Men, women, and all of them watching this very closely. And if the Democrats continue to push this at their own peril. So when we come back, the second question here is even more telling because it's one that is we're being beaten over the head with. Well, why is she doing it? If this is all a lie, why is she doing this? Why would she even come forward at great personal cost to her? What a hero, brave! Ho, ho, ho! Yes, Dr. Ford, savior of humanity. Play that with my commentary afterwards when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Why would Dr. Ford come out of the woodwork after all these years at great personal cost to her and her family if these allegations were not true? This question posed by Randy Kay to a focus group of women voters. Now, actually, I take this back. They're GOP voters, these women. So, I stand by the analysis, right? The expectation here is that these ladies are going to, identify with a woman that has been putatively wronged. And that definitely is not the case. So, the second part of the question, listen closely.
Why would she come forward if this wasn't true? Because it has basically destroyed her family. She's had to move, she's gone undercover, she's gotten death threats. So if she's lying, why come forward?
She's also destroying his life, his wife's lives, his children's lives, his career. Mm-hmm. I mean, why didn't she come out sooner if she's telling the truth?
Why didn't she come out when he was going into the Bush White House? Why didn't she come out when he's been a federal judge for over a decade.
Why not have a thorough investigation instead of just the two of them, he said, she said?
Because it doesn't matter. It does not matter what everyone else has to say.
Yes. All right. So the two things, right? Why would she come forward with this, even though, look at what it's costing her? I mean, supposedly she's getting death threats. They had to move out of their house, et cetera, et cetera. And then the other thing we got to get to as well. Let's just take it one at a time. So let me ask you this. You have, ever since November 2016, ever since 2016, Trump is elected, I really do believe that the left has gone absolutely bananas in the ensuing, almost 2 years now. And I do believe, let's just for a minute say that this woman's memory of what happened that day is that something like this happened to her. An incident of this type. Now, this woman, for sure, what we know about her is that she's a Democrat and a liberal and an activist. Now, right before all of this went public, all personal private information, right down to her Rate My Professor page, which is a website for college students where even high school kids, where they can crap on their teachers. Basically, everything was scrubbed and removed from the internet. That's not fishy, right? That's not about truth seeking, coming forward, palms up. That's Democratic Party operatives working. Probably use the same people that scrubbed Hillary Clinton's server. The Democrats have great experience scrubbing things off the interwebs. But at any rate, all of this happens. Why? Because they want to present her just as a lady that was wronged by this evil guy that wants to become Supreme Court Justice. The narrative, of course, that we know and understand that this lady's an activist. She has a huge axe to grind. She probably in her pea brain is absolutely convinced that if Brett Kavanaugh gets on the court, Roe versus Wade is over. And if you've seen a Democrat Party protest with a bunch of women wearing meow meow hats screaming about their abortion rights, you know that people are, there's some serious commitment there on the left. And the left is turning her into a martyr. Okay, she's getting death threats from some crazy Trump supporters, but on the flip side, the left, I mean, they're getting ready to, she's going to be next Mother Teresa. So I'll tell you, I think that's part of the story. Now, about the third question there was why not just have an FBI investigation? Why not just turn it over to the FBI and figure it out? And again, what does that lady answer? Actually, this is very pithy. She says it's a he said, she said deal. We don't need the FBI. And I'm going to tell you something here. Just a little bit from court. Any lawyer will tell you plenty of cases are he said, she said. There's testimony from one person and another person. And, in court, you get testimony that is absolutely totally different depending on the person you talk to. Now, some of that is because people actually are lying. Another part of that is that people don't remember traumatic events very well. This is common with people who've been mugged, people who've had, there's bank tellers. The common thing, bank teller will never remember exactly what the bank robber looked like because in the moment, it'll just, everything's a blur. But what we have here is an opportunity for them both to testify and for the triers of fact, which this isn't a criminal case, so it's not a jury, but rather the Senate, they will determine who is more truthful sounding. And that is exactly how these things work. This is how disputes play out in courtrooms across America every single day, even in high stakes criminal cases. So when we talk about the presumption of innocence, when we talk about due process, those are entitlements that belong to Kavanaugh. He is the holder of those rights, of those privileges. And he's entitled, absolutely, to go in and testify and to clear his name. And this is how it needs to play out. And all this thing about the FBI investigation is just a ploy to waste time and come up with nothing. I mean, how do you investigate something? She doesn't even know what year it happened for sure. Give me a break. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Everyone is weighing in on this controversy. Maybe quite funny to me, of all people, Hillary Clinton, discussing why we should believe Dr. Ford. Well, you know, because, well, we'll play the tape. Here is Hillary Clinton talking to Rachel Maddow on Tuesday on MSNBC.
There can't be one set of rules for Democrats and one set of rules for Republicans. That's one of the reasons why people don't have any confidence in the Congress. How can you? You don't know what's going to happen from day to day. I remember back in the Thomas hearings when Senator Byrd was asked what he was going to do, and he said, in a situation like this, we should give the benefit of the doubt to the court and the country. And that's what the Republicans should be doing right now, from the White House to the Senate. Give the benefit of the doubt to the court and the country.
Believe the woman. Believe her. So I don't know how idiotic. I've always said she's a dummy. I remember when Senator Byrd said, quote, "I shall never fight in the armed forces with a Negro by my side." Of course, you know, Senator Byrd was a noted member of the KKK for a number of years before he went into politics, or maybe right around the time he went into politics. A shame he never quite fully lived down in life. So, yes, if I were Hillary Clinton, I certainly wouldn't be bringing up Senator Byrd in any quotes whatsoever. And the one set of rules for Democrats and one set of rules for Republicans, that's the reason why people don't have any confidence in the Congress? What is that? There's a lot of reasons why people don't have confidence in Congress. Now, we've always known that there's one set of rules for Democrats. And then Republicans, there are no rules, right? And Republicans have to play by them. But the greater point is, she's saying, listen to the woman. Hear the woman out. This is not about politics. Put court above country. So going back in time to that now infamous Matt Lauer interview, January 27th, 1998, Hillary had a very different idea of why people dared speak about a young woman giving her husband blowies in the Oval Office. Listen to this.
Look at the very people who are involved in this. They have popped up in other settings. This is the great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it, is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
Yep, that's it, Hillary. You nailed it. Clintons were both very good at nailing things. Okay. But my absolute favorite brilliance this week comes from the Coconut Wireless from across the Pacific Ocean, a beacon of brilliance. Senator Mazie Hirono, Democrat, Hawaii. This is why Hawaii is an absolute nightmare of a state. If this is the person they elect, here we go.
I expect the men in this country and the men in this committee, and many of them, believe me, because we all signed on to this letter to demand an FBI investigation. But really, guess who's perpetuating all of these kinds of actions? It's the men in this country. And I just want to say to the men in this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing for a change.
I just want to tell the men in this country, shut up and step up. Do the right thing for a change. See, I think that the greater part of this entire story is how the Me Too movement has been weaponized as a means of eliminating your political opponents. And that's in politics. I think, of course, in other settings, such as the workplace where you and I live, right, in the real world, it's being weaponized as well as a means for people to take you out if you are perceived to be an obstacle for entirely other reasons. We'll discuss a little bit of that. Also, get a little pulse on what's going on in the midterms. What bearing does all of this have on it? Go through that. Texas. The race in Texas is heating up. My goodness. And John Kerry. That guy just won't let it go. I love what's going on right now. So stay tuned. We're on top of it. Also, you've got the news, right, Robbie? You're following what's going on. So this is at least as timely as we can make it. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, okay. This whole Kavanaugh thing started as a means by which the Democrats hope to galvanize their base, make a little fundraising coin, and score political points right before the midterms. One huge unintended consequence that I am sensing from following and talking to my various sources is that while the Democrats are sort of flustered by this, and I think they're not quite sure 100% whether this woman is to be trusted and that this thing is going to work out for them and that they've done any real political damage to the Republicans, the right has unified because of this issue in a very significant way. Look, if you go back 3 weeks, 4 weeks, what you saw was a tremendous amount of discord between Trump and other Republicans. We'll call them establishment Republicans or, neocons and the like. You had in the news 24/7. What were we hearing about? We were hearing about Michael Cohen. We were hearing about Paul Manafort. We were hearing about all these things, even though tangentially related to Trump and probably in the long term not damaging. Legally, they were bearing a political cost on Trump for no other reason than they were taking up space in our minds and in the news. The beautiful thing for Trump and the terrible thing for Democrats is that by talking about Kavanaugh and having this burn all the oxygen that is in the air, by having it be all about Kavanaugh, a nominee, I mean, nobody is saying Trump should have known this. How could Trump have put a rapist up for nomination in the Supreme Court? Nobody's saying that. That's an absurd leap even for some of these people at MSNBC. So at any rate, that's not being said. CNN put out an article yesterday, or was it the day before? But anyway, they put out an article saying, hey, This is weird. People in the White House are confused because Trump hasn't really said anything about Christine Ford. He hasn't weighed in on this and has been so measured. What's up? Now, Trump blew that arguably today because he sent out a tweet saying, hey, this thing happened 35, 36 years ago. Did you report it? I mean, presumably your parents love you. If this really happened, you would have sent it, your parents would have called the cops. Probably not helpful, but also in and of itself. I saw Daily Mail called victim shaming. Why call her a victim? Can we talk about that for a minute? That's going to backfire, too. She's not a victim unless it really happened. The Democrats are always quick to label people victims. So at any rate, you have. Yeah, you're going to have, so you're going to have this thing. This, as it develops, you're going to see that the Republicans here are actually, in hindsight, have been very measured. You've had Grassley, Senator Chuck Grassley, who is the head of the Judiciary Committee, been very measured and firm. And you've got, and really nobody has stepped in it. But everyone, the entire GOP right now is very unified. I saw Bob Corker. Bob Corker, you know who he is, Tennessee Republican. He's on his way out. Hates Trump. Not a Trump supporter at all. Does not like Trump. He is 100% behind Kavanaugh and thinks that this is just all a bunch of hogwash. And the same is true with Mitch McConnell. I mean, he's pushing this through. He's going forward. He's moving forward. And it's a unifying issue. Each party wants a unifying issue. And one of the things that was worrying me going into the midterms was that the Republicans were a little bit out there disjointed. Trump supporters were discouraged by various bad news, Michael Cohen and the like, Stormy Daniels, et cetera, et cetera. And also you had establishment Republicans who just basically wouldn't care. Like, oh, we hate this Trump guy, whatever, Congress, I don't know. But now they care. They see what it would look like if Congress went blue. And I believe this is going to be very motivating. So there is a fresh breaking report here that CNN says she's going to meet with the FBI on Friday in San Francisco. Is that a week from today? A week from today. Okay. So apparently Dr. Ford will meet with the FBI. This is a turn of events. I'll get more on this in the break and tell you what I think. But at any rate, so that's a late breaking development. Well, that would certainly push back. Have they talked anything about when she would go in for her testimony? She doesn't need to testify after talking to the FBI. But I know why she wants to do it, because the worry is that anything she says to the FBI has to be truthful, right? Oh, that's another thing, too. It's interesting that she's going to be talking to the FBI. You realize the federal statute, you can't lie to the feds. Can't lie to the federal police, any federal agent. And it's kind of like the same as giving testimony under oath. What a neat turn of events. I'm sorry, I'm analyzing this in real time. I'll tell you what, I think that's a great move. Yeah, we'll investigate it, and we're going to investigate it we'll start the investigation by talking to you. And this turns it around on her. Now she has to repeat these allegations to them. And if they're ever disproven, she could end up in a world of hot water. But I don't know what that does to the Thursday testimony, but presumably would not have to wait to testify to talk to the FBI. The two things can run concurrently, but she may not want to do that. She may want to make sure that her testimony is fully consistent with what she tells the FBI. So her lawyer, Katz, Deborah Katz, big-time Democratic Party activist. She's a sexual harassment attorney based in D.C., very prominent lawyer. But big time donor to the Democratic Party, someone that absolutely is expensive, costs a lot of money. I doubt that Dr. Ford, on her Palo Alto University salary, has money to pay her. These are all questions that bear asking. How did Katz get paid? So at any rate, this story. This is good. I mean, in essence, if the Republicans just say, all right, OK, you know, we'll take an extra week here and we'll see if there's anything there. Wrap it up. Get it done. And the allegation isn't out there that they have rushed the process. And have plenty of political cover to say, look, we investigated it. There's nothing there. Now let's do the right thing and vote. Yeah. And you're right. And then Democrats end up with egg on their face. Have you heard what's going on in Texas? Ted Cruz, right? Ted Cruz, the conservative lion of the Senate, is in a fight for his life. He's running against a young upstart guy, Beto O'Rourke. Man, try to say that fast three times. Not with a head cold. Don't try that. I'm recovering. I'm going to get there, I promise. Now they have it. The Cook Political Report came out today, says the race is now a toss-up. But O'Rourke, Beto, really stepped in it a few times. We don't have a transcript of that town hall meeting that he did, right? So at any rate, but, you know, he's up there on stage, and a young, articulate, I believe African-American voter asks him, what do you make of this? What do you make about illegal immigrants working in the state of Texas? Is this a problem? And in an almost unbelievably tone-deaf reply, Beto says to him, yeah, but, you know, look, there's this cotton gin I know of, and they can't get black teens to work there, and so they have to hire illegals. Now, he says it a little more artfully than that, but an absolutely disastrous thing. Can you imagine if Ted Cruz said something like that? I mean, they would get he would be burned at the stake almost immediately. But I don't actually think that that was what really is going to hurt him with voters. I think it was his second. He likened law enforcement the next day. He likened law enforcement, compared law enforcement to Jim Crow. Basically looking at law enforcement as agents of racism, perpetuating injustice in society. And this, folks, I'm telling you, this is a non-starter for the good people of Texas. You can have left, right, Republican, Democrat, but they like their police in Texas. They like their American flags in Texas. They believe in law and order. God knows. I mean, they execute more people than the rest of the United States put together. I don't, you know, I'm telling you, Texas is a law and order place where they revere the police. So when you take aside the whole argument, of course, it's an absurd argument. Of course, you know, the police forces are not agents perpetuating racism. There are some bad cops, and we, of course, see all the videos, and it happens. Absolutely. And I've been involved with those cases, and they are not pretty, and they disappoint everyone involved in them. But here, for a guy who is looking, I mean, look, with like, Cruz is a known. People in Texas know him. He's got name recognition. Now, Texas demographically has changed. You've got all these companies that have left California, have left New York, have left various liberal blue states because these states are so inhospitable to business and to business development. They've relocated to Texas because Texas is run well, because conservatives know how to run government. But these companies have brought with them blue state voters. And so they are importing, like a disease, they are importing the very problems that created a political climate, a business climate that drove them from oftentimes their place of origin to begin with. I understand that a big fast food chain that's based in California may be soon relocating to Colorado. Now, it was founded here. I think you can read between the lines and figure out which company I speak of. Founded here, started here, turned into a multi-billion dollar business. But the irony, of course, is, you know, you take these companies, they leave the state, and the people, this is how stupid some people are. We know these people because we have to interact with them from time to time. But they don't get it. They don't understand that the reason that their jobs were in jeopardy in the state that they were in was because they kept voting in people like Kevin DeLeon and Dianne Feinstein, Governor Moonbeam and Gavin Newsom. It's unbelievable. So Beto, will he win? I don't think so. I think that all these polls were taken before he said these things. I think the benefit goes to the guy who knows, who's a known entity, right? So in Texas, it's a toss-up. It could certainly lean Democratic. I just don't see it. I don't see it. Now, I get that Cruz is unpopular with libs, but he's got a strong fan base. And this Beto guy is kind of viewed as a young upstart. And the things that he is saying, these are foot and mouth terrible things that do not are not going to persuade a lot of Democrats, I think, frankly, also in Texas, are not going to be persuaded by this. Plenty of Democrats in Texas like law enforcement. He's not, as far as now yet, walked back these comments. So that is a race to watch. McCaskill. You saw Claire McCaskill in Missouri. That's another race to watch. And she put out a long press release yesterday explaining why she was not going to vote for Kavanaugh. And I'm looking at her poll numbers and I'm saying, look, it's on a razor's edge. And this is one that the Democrats theoretically would have to win to take back the to take back the Senate. And her Republican challenger is gaining ground. These are very interesting things. And the greater point is, this idea of pushing so aggressively a story that seems to me to be very flimsy, that is wrapped in a lot of emotion and a lot of, the Me Too movement, I think, is becoming a little less popular than it was a year ago. People are realizing that it's subject to abuse. And so wrapping it up in the Me Too movement, making the charges so flimsy and acting so outraged will create problems for the Democrats. Absolutely. And certainly in the Senate races, they want to claim the Senate, but it's a tough deal. It's not necessarily in the bag, so to speak. All right. John Kerry up next. Fascinating stuff. It's always interesting, to look at these problems as if they just reversed Republican and Democrat, what the media would be saying. Quite different, in my opinion. Sam Rzhovsky, back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo launched a little volley of words at John Kerry, claiming that Kerry can't seem to get off the stage, criticizing him quite rightly for his continued visitation, communication, meetings with Iranian officials. This is what, just imagine we just reverse this around, turn it around. Okay, so let's just say for a minute. Did you think Iraq mattered to the Bush administration? Yeah. Yeah. No duh, right? Where are you going with this, Sam? Explain yourself. Well, easy. Okay, so it mattered to them, all right? It mattered to Dick Cheney. It mattered to other people in the cabinet. And can you imagine what the press reaction would be if Cheney continued to have high-level meetings with Iraqi officials after he left the White House, right? After when Obama was in office and Biden was vice president, Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. Can you imagine what they would have said about Cheney if that had been the case? The Democrats on every level cannot get over the fact that they lost this election. Still, it's been 2 years. This is like I think we've all been in a relationship and had an ex that we've had to get away from. And what's the unifying feature of the common thread is that the ex cannot let it go. They are obsessed. They're stalking you. They're constantly pouring through your social media. They are contacting your friends, your enemies. Let it go, right? I don't know. Maybe Kerry needs to go see the Frozen movies, a movie. That's the theme song, yeah, in case those of you who haven't suffered through that. This is consistent with everything that you see in the media, everything you hear from Hillary Clinton, still whining about the race, still complaining that she was robbed. Irony of ironies, usually it's the person who complains the loudest of being robbed that is the perpetrator herself. So look no further for a victim than poor Bernie. But nonetheless, this is fascinating. Now, the Logan Act, keeps getting brought up. Look, nobody's been prosecuted under the Logan Act. Nobody, stop talking about that. Now, Pompeo isn't talking about it. I don't think Trump has talked about it for a while. Now, of course, I know if it were the other way around and Cheney were out there in 2009 communicating with Iraq, they would try to prosecute him. Holder would be prosecuting him under the Logan Act. No question. But nobody's actually been convicted under it. It's a nonsense law. Whatever. Doesn't matter. But the issue is that there's certain decorum that is followed. And in their minds, Democrats believe truly, they truly believe that Trump is illegitimate, that he's not really the president. I mean, he got elected, whatever, but he cheated. He did it with the help of the Russians. You see, some of this nonsense really does have consequences. And it creates, I think, a very terrible thing. Can you imagine how confused those poor Iranians are? You know, they got Kerry Shine. Didn't we get rid of this guy? He gave us everything we wanted and he's still hanging around? Total loser. Now, speaking of the Russians, I've got something great today for Friday Funny. We all remember the Soviet Union, you know, when the world was simple. We had the Ruskies. We had the Chinese communists and Palestinians. Oh, yes. And we had the IRA, right? So those were the bad guys in the world when I was a kid. So here I have something for you related to the Soviet Union. Back right after this. Friday Funny up next. We all need a little break here from all the serious stuff. No? No? Yeah, I think so. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Friday Funny, Sam Majowski, Sam Nation. All right. Now, I love this so much. Apparently, as we're talking about Trump declassifying the Trump, the Russia, you know, collusion documents, some old Russia documents were declassified recently. And this from the CIA archive from the Cold War. Jokes that were recorded by CIA operatives working in the Soviet Union, and they were sent back in part. The jokes tell why do you think that the CIA was interested in jokes? There's actually a very serious reason for it. They wanted to gauge the public mood, right? They wanted to know what the Soviet public really thought of their government. So one of the jokes actually made it all the way to President Reagan's desk. He loved to tell it. And the joke is as follows. An American tells a Russian that in the United States, he is so free that he can stand in front of the White House and yell, "To hell with Ronald Reagan." The Russian replies, "Yeah, that's nothing. I can stand in front of the Kremlin and yell, 'To hell with Ronald Reagan, too.'" You get it? Nobody's, you guys not laughing? Okay, I thought that was funny. This is good. So you guys know, that it's like Venezuela right now. In these control economies where the state decides what to produce and when to produce it, frequently the result of that are terrible shortages where you have no goods available. So here's the joke. A worker standing in a liquor line says, "I have had enough. Save my place. I am going to shoot Gorbachev." 2 hours later, he returns to claim his place in line. His friends ask, "Hey, did you get him?" "No, the line there was even longer than the line here." Oh. Some of these are a little obscure. I don't. Here's a sentence from a schoolboy's weekly composition class essay. My cat just had 7 kittens. They are all communists. Sentence from same boy's composition the following week. My cat's 7 kittens are all capitalists. Teacher reminds boy that the previous week he had said the kittens were communists. But now they've opened their eyes, replied the child. What do you get from this, right? Well, the Russian people, they, in spite of having some of the tightest controls on them, right? No foreign media, no foreign press, nothing. They were, the Soviet Union was a sealed off country. They still got it. People still understood that their system of government was a joke. And mind you, about 8 years later, the system completely crumbled. A man goes into a shop and asks, "You don't have any meat?" "No," replies the sales lady, "we don't have any fish. It's the store across the street that doesn't have any meat." I'll tell you, I remember this firsthand. I've mentioned it a few times here on the program. It's a great story because as a 10-year-old, I ended up in Czechoslovakia right after the fall. No businesses had been privatized yet. Everything was still very much the old system. I was there, I think, about a month, 6 weeks after the socialist government abdicated. And I remember this so vividly. Going into a store, I had plenty of currency in my pocket. Because I went in and I took $20 of my savings from home and from my allowance, and I traded it into Czech crowns and got, I don't know, like 10,000 Czech crowns or whatever it would have been back then. And I had a ton of cash on me, but it was hard to find inventory to buy. I still do remember. I remember the shelves. They were empty. You want to talk about this is what happens, right? We talked about price fixing. Anti-gouging laws last week. The result of that is that you have empty shelves and no goods for people to buy. That is essentially what the entire country was like, and you have a black market economy to get any goods, where the market again is set by willing buyer and willing seller. So, good jokes out there, all declassified now and can be perused. This is in an article in the Daily Mail. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, okay. Is Trump going to declassify these documents? There's now some some smoke signals being sent by Trump that he will not be declassifying everything as previously hoped for. Now, what is this all about? These are the background documents that reveal why key members of the Trump campaign and later the Trump administration were being surveilled by federal law enforcement and the CIA. Now, what makes this so crazy is, of course, the idea, and we've gone over this ad nauseum here on the program, is that you've got Americans that are being spied on, right, by our secret services, and that essentially a counter-espionage operation was launched against Americans on American soil that was based on very flimsy evidence. Now, Trump's instincts here are right. He ought to release this. This would be the biggest bombshell. I'm telling you, it's so arcane. It's a complicated deal, but basically they fabricated. The Obama administration, the FBI, CIA, fabricated the reasons that they gave to the judge at the FISA court to obtain these special warrants. Now, we as Americans are very un-okay with this. And the reason for that is, well, because we kind of don't like getting spied on, right? It's a big news story today that Apple, did you hear this? They're supposedly tracking our phone calls and, you know, to provide a better customer experience. We're not okay with it. It's front page news because this is not good. Our understanding, we were brought up to believe that the Constitution protected us from warrantless surveillance, and that a warrant would only be provided for a very specific set and strict set of guidelines and based on some key factors. Like, hey, maybe there's some ascertainable reason that we're up to no good. But it cannot be that simply some suspicion of meeting with a professor somewhere. This is one of the ways they got in. You know this? The CIA hired a professor to mingle with a top guy in the Trump campaign. Not even a top guy, mid-level guy in the Trump campaign. The professor was the one who pushed himself on them, suggested Russian meetings and the like. And Carter Page and all these guys, they didn't even take the bite. But based on that, they put it in the FISA court application. So I think daylight on all of this is called for. I don't know why Trump's backing down. And we'll have more on this, I suspect, next week as it develops. Probably some more things coming out about it later today. But it's fascinating because it's a classic Trump move. No other president would do this. And everybody's up in arms. Everybody's saying, oh, how could he do this? Methods and sources are going to be compromised. But Alan Dershowitz, a retired professor emeritus of law at Harvard University, he said something really telling this week, and that is the vast majority of classified information these days is classified not because it poses a risk to operators, to our intelligence sources, and to our secrets, but rather it poses a risk to people's reputations within the government. And that these departments that classify these documents do so to protect one another from humiliation. Why do you think Obama put deep-level secrecy on these documents, making them so that nobody in the future, not even Trump, would dare release them without ending up, you know, with political pressure fallback? Because they do not want you and I to hear what's there. So I hope, I don't know, I hope in part they do release enough of this to get to the bottom of it. And I understand there's an ongoing investigation, but the whole thing is a farce top to bottom. The same as this Kavanaugh deal. It's a farce. Just the Kavanaugh deal is easier to understand because, you know, I think we've all been accused of something we haven't done. And we get it. We viscerally understand it. This spy stuff is a little too James Bond for us, and our imaginations can carry us further, certainly, than it ought to. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Hi, speaking of gut check, right? We're talking about these accusations as somehow violating our sense of right and wrong. Again, Senator Hirono, a Democrat of Hawaii, on Tuesday, talks about her gut. And I think this is a very interesting way she presents her case for why we ought to believe Dr. Ford. Listen closely.
I think we all know when something is unfair, when something smells. Let's face it, this is so patently unfair to her. And what really bothers me and gets me so angry is that the White House is victimizing this person. Why don't we get that out there? That why should we participate in a victimization of someone who has the courage to come forward? And she is under absolutely no obligation to participate in a smearing of her and her family.
What the heck? This woman has come out and smeared Kavanaugh. What if, just what if, it's not true? And frankly, with nothing behind it to substantiate it, don't you think maybe it's more likely than not that it isn't? But you contrast this on the same day. This all happened on Tuesday, the same day. Here is Dianne Feinstein, the perpetrator of this whole fiasco, distancing herself from the accuser.
I have no say. I'm the lead Democrat, but the Republicans control. So this is all up to the Republican side.
Okay.
And I think it's really too bad that no one called her or called her lawyer. My understanding is she got emails. And this is a woman, and I really believe, who's been profoundly impacted by this. Now, I can't say everything's truthful. I don't know. But I do know that they had to contact her lawyers. And our side isn't putting this together. The Republican side is putting it together. I know she did not want to go public. That's why I didn't make the letter public, because I couldn't be assured what would happen. Unfortunately, that was taken out of my control.
Okay.
And this is a stunning admission. And Feinstein is dead right. She can't say everything's truthful. She can't say any of it's truthful. She wasn't there. She has no way of judging this. At this point, she hasn't heard from Kavanaugh. But understand this deflection. Here's the person who has been closest to this whole thing as it unraveled, right? She's the one who received the letter from her constituent in California and talks about how this was taken out of her control, talks about how the Republicans are in charge and it's up to them. And so I think if there's any takeaway here, it's you get if the Republicans give her an opportunity to speak and she takes it or doesn't, they've done everything they possibly can. And the only people who will look ridiculous, the only side that's going to look like a bunch of clowns, are the Democrats running around talking about all this nonsense. And the most dangerous thing is allowing the Me Too movement to claim innocent victims. That's the real victimization that occurs much of the time. There was a woman, Emily Linden, she's a journalist, quote unquote, who a year ago, back in November 2017, wrote this on Twitter. Here's an unpopular opinion. I'm actually not at all concerned about innocent men losing their jobs over false sexual harassment allegations. Now, she expanded on this opinion and explained, hey, whatever it takes to eliminate male patriarchy, I'm fine with it. Can you imagine if a Republican got up, a Trump supporter, and said, you know, I'm perfectly fine if the cops kill a few innocent people, you know, as long as they're out there protecting us and chasing bad guys, I'm perfectly okay with that. This is insanity. It's not who we are as Americans. And the more the Democrats push this ridiculous narrative, the worse they will look. And I'm telling you, this is so tremendously short-sighted. Cheap political points at the expense of 200-plus years of established law. Have a great weekend. I'm going to get better, so I'm not hacking and coughing here next week. Sorry about that. Hope you didn't suffer through it too much. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Have a wonderful weekend with your loved ones, family, and friends. I will see you here next week. Looking forward already. Sam Rzhovsky over and out. People, keep up.